I mean, sometimes I change it, but not on purpose.
Hi. My question is for you, the writer. What inspired you to write this story?
You know, I don't know beyond. I was curious to see. I'd never seen a solo show that had elements of a thriller. And I thought, I wonder if you can have one person on stage and it have a tension at times of a thriller. And so, one thing that did change that was also because of Billy was it was in the script, there would be things that I would indicate, like Philip says, or Stephanie says, or Mark says, and because it's so clear who's speaking with Billy, it would irritate me as an audience member to hear, we know who's talking, we don't need to hear Stephanie says, Stephanie's here. there were little shavings in terms of, it made it more like dialogue in some of the scenes because Billy just plays it, he brings everybody to life. So you don't need to indicate anything. But I don't know. I do watch a lot of film noirs and thrillers. So it was a little bit, the only conscious thing was, I wonder if I can make a story that, and a life that has that element to it. But it's funny because I write so intuitively, and I've seen every performance that Billy's done except for two where I had to perform myself. But I've been here all the time, initially I had the feeling of like, I wrote this? I mean, it was just because I was hearing it different. I was hearing what's in it because Billy was bringing it to life. And I was like, I wrote this? I'm talented.
First, I have to comment about the scrim in the background. I see the spirit of Mark Rothko sort of hanging over. I'm never going to look at a Mark Rothko again. You've given this...
This is a Mark Rothko. Most of the money went there.
it gives this feeling of, these long plane flights where you get into a conversation with a stranger and talk about things that you're never going to see this person again. You get like really deep and it's no risk because it's totally anonymous. And I'm wondering how that, sort of sensation, especially with this sort of, ethereal cloud blue background, intersected into the design and the feel. And then also a second question is, I have an Irish friend and a British friend who will joke about the power to get free drinks at American bars by throwing on the accent really thickly. And so, in the opening lines, it's sort of like that hit me. And so the particularity of that and how that might travel with this play being performed elsewhere. In the West End, let's say.
We like that idea.
What?
They'll know I'm a fraud.
But will they?
You know what? I had English friends here who I grew up with someone just like him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was no...
All right, I take it back. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
Lee, can you talk a little bit about some of the choices behind the design?
My idea then that the designers and I worked towards was creating a space that was kind of immediately put the audience at ease, like, oh, I know what this place is, I know what it looks like, it's a deck, or it's a, that for me, the nightmare of going to see a solo show is that you walk in and it's like a stool and like a rack with hats.
That's my last show!
you're just like, oh God. And so I wanted to create a space that, except for David's shows.
I can pull a hat rack off.
Yeah, you sure can. But I wanted to create a space that felt like something and that transformed over the course of the night the way that the character did. And so that the space was as unreliable as the character, that it had, it carried emotional content at times, and that was evocative. And so that was kind of the charge, I felt like, in terms of the design of the space and how to use light and how to use the scrim. And the idea of the scrim was that, like what you said, and also that there were times where we expose the lighting instruments underneath, and that there was, that kind of went towards the idea of cover and facade and what's behind the curtain and what's not and who is he really. And and so that was kind of how that all came about, but really everything was in support of the performance. And I'll say, like, our sound designer Bart, who the goal of the sound design, just to mention, is that you kind of can't tell if it's happening or not. And there's actually sound running through almost the entire show. And so there are waves, but it's like, are there waves on that boat? You can't quite know. And that everything exists at a nuance, like a level that is, like, it's sort of, is it there? I can't tell. When he talks about being in Midtown, did we just hear that car beep, or was that outside? And so that the design is all the time making you question on a subliminal level what you're seeing. And the sound, I always say about Bart's sound design that he shifts air through sound. And so every time that we go to the mirror with Harry, there's a sound cue that goes with that. And I feel like it creates, you don't hear it, but that it creates dis-ease or a real sense of tension, I think, and without knowing that it's happening. And that kind of, it's a very subtle design choice in that way, but I think supports, like, the incredible specificity of what Billy's doing.
We have time for one more question, possibly two. Oh.
My question is also a two-parter for David and Billy. At what point in Philip's life is he actually recounting this tale? Is this sort of many years later in your mind, or is it something he's just fresh off the experience?
I mean, it can kind of be, I don't exactly know what it is for you, but...
This was a source of a lot of conversation. I mean, you know, when Lee mentions, like, the specificity of the choices that we make, all of that is a complete collaboration. The specificity that I'm bringing to it is all stuff that we worked and shaped and asked questions about, labored over, and understanding the context for the story. Because, again, like, I think in terms of an actor, is a realism, naturalism, who are you talking to? What do you want? So we discovered that there are a number of different, like, competing agendas there. One, there's moments that David writes that are inhabited moments, moments that are actually, you get to witness the scene, that suddenly in the middle of this story, this scene pops up in front of you and you get to see the scene as it was. I don't, if that's something that Philip can do, or he's just conjuring it, or, and the other, to the bigger question of who is being spoken to, and, those were questions that I had to answer myself. And ultimately, because the mandate became between us, well, what is most effective for you, Billy, to tell yourself so that we can have this momentum here, so that we can have the emotional imperative of him needing to tell the story. And that took a while for me to develop in a way that I could remember and fixate on. But I keep that to myself.
Yeah, that's.
It's my mom. I'm talking to my mom. No, I'm just kidding. It's important for me to have something precious about it.
With, especially with solo shows, it's really important to have some secrets in terms of the performer. you know, it's like when I'm, you know, I just think for your things that are for yourself. But I thought it was a few years after he'd sort of gotten away with it. In my view, that was the initial idea, but you could move it. You know, it could be whatever you choose for it to be. But it's, I mean, he's clear. He's definitely clear. He's in the clear at this point. So it's, in my mind, it's sort of a few years, but it could be more.
But maybe not totally settled with it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not over yet. You know,
that's one reason he needs to tell it, I think.
Yeah. The original ending was a little, we cut it down a little bit. Actually, I don't think it would work. I thought it was a nice idea where when it was in Fiji, he was ordering this elaborate Fijian drink. And then he says to the girl, like, if I'm not here, just leave the drink by the deck chair. And he says some other things. And then the music's playing and he walks off and you think he's going to come back. And the music's and the lights are on the chair and the music's playing, and then he doesn't come back. So and the lights go down. But I think it would. That's very hard to. This is a better ending. But it would also be. I tried it out, and people just assumed it was the ending as soon as I walked off the stage. So I was like, but the lights are on the chair and the music's playing. It's the ending. But So the assumption was that it continued, like the story is not over. Like, where is he now? And you know, he could do it again. Or not.
Mm. I agree.
He's, you know, that English accent can, it's got me where I am. he's who he is and he's very charming. So.
That sounds like a sequel.
Yeah, sequel.
I thought of a sequel.
All right. Now we're talking.
Don't plan anything for the next 10 years.
These were such good questions. Thank you all so much. And I want to thank again David and Lee and Billy for this conversation.
We hope you enjoyed this behind-the-scenes glimpse into Harry Clark. If you enjoyed this audio performance, be sure to check out more of our theater programs, including Latin History for Morons, written and performed by John Leguizamo.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.